Yo, what's up? Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. We have an action-packed show for you today. Bruce Feldman is going to stop by in less than 20 minutes, one of the premier college football insiders, as I want to give a shout-out to the Pac-12 players. We'll talk about that in a second. Amin is going to stop by at 1040 as we talk about the weekend of the NBA in the bubble. Mike Greenberg is going to check in with us. Mike Greenberg, the host of Get Up. And on August 17th, his show will debut here on this station at 9 a.m. from 9 to 11, leading into Max Kellerman at 11, Mason in Ireland at 1, and myself and LZ at 4 o'clock. That's how we'll roll. And obviously, Keyshawn and his show will be on in the morning. At 11:40, I did an interview this weekend with Ashley Brewer of ABC7. She now works for ESPN. It was good to catch up with her. I did a show on ESPN Radio this weekend with her. And we talked to Keith Olbermann about Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball. And good God, did Keith just go in on Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball. So it was so good that I wanted to play a chunk of it for you at the end of the show. So we'll have that for you today. It's all brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Full court cell phone coverage you need. Just $45 a month gets you the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data and 2G for up to 50% less than the big carriers. Only at Walmart. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at StraightTalk.com. I want to start with the Lakers real quick before I get into the Pac-12 stuff. Here is the situation. So the Lakers lose to the Raptors. And again, we have a situation where Anthony Davis was passive in the fourth quarter. AD only took 7 shots in the entire game, 1 in the fourth quarter. Now, granted, Toronto's entire scheme on defense is to basically flood or double team the superstars in LeBron and AD and force everyone else to hit shots. And the Lakers went 10 of 40 from 3. But in the fourth quarter, with the game tied, with 6 minutes and 38 seconds to go, the Raptors outscored the Lakers the rest of the way by 15 points. Kyle Kuzma couldn't defend Kyle Lowry on switches. Alex Caruso turned over the ball like 3 times in that fourth quarter. Anthony Davis was unbelievably passive. LeBron was moving the ball, but couldn't get a lot of his shots going. He did get a couple shots going early in the quarter. But Anthony Davis particularly was, man, he had an issue. And listen, I'm just saying that you know how I feel about this. The Lakers championship hinges on Anthony Davis, because I feel like LeBron will figure it out over a 7-game series. But I'm telling you, this is about Anthony Davis standing in the way of dominating and potentially hoisting a 17th trophy for the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, Laura, LeBron, there's some LeBron sound there about being asked if they're still trying to get their legs back. Let me hear that sound from LeBron in the post game from the Raptors, because I'd like to hear his response to that particular question.
I don't know. I think that's an individual question to every individual. For me, personally, my legs feel pretty good. And I was just trying to put the ball on time, on target, trying to run the offense and try to get my shots as well. So, we've been out for a while, and I think the game legs will continue to come, as the, this AAU tournament continues to go on. So I'm not too worried about that. Our shooters shoot, and we got some great guys that can make shots from the perimeter, and they will make them.
So, look, LeBron painted a rosy picture there, Bergman. And I'm not saying that after 2 games, all is lost. And the Lakers play again against the Jazz today, which you can catch right here on 710 ESPN. Game starts at 6. When does our coverage begin, Greg Bergman, since you're the corporate time-stealing weasel here that would know that?
Time-stealing weasel. Yeah. Pre-game starts at 4:30 with Alan Sliwa and Michael Thompson.
Okay, so Mason Ireland 90 minutes today is what you're
Correct.
Telling me.
Yes.
Okay, Mason Ireland 90 minutes, and then the pre-game show with Sliwa and Michael at 4:30.
Corporate weasel.
So,
get out of here.
are you starting to get a little worried? I'm telling you, I have been very steadfast, okay, from the beginning of the season, that the difference between the Lakers winning a championship and losing a championship will hinge upon Anthony Davis's performances, particularly late in games. And at least through 2 games, it has been an issue. What is your level of concern?
I don't have too high of a level of concern. It's probably about a 5-6 right now, just because things are going to happen. I think the biggest thing that I saw from that game is just the ability to guard elite guards. And you're not Kyle Kuzma. He's not built for an elite guard. And most guys are not built for guys like Kyle Lowry and, you know, Chris Paul or Damian Lillard, those types of guys. And that's where Avery Bradley really came into handy there, was he was the guy that was able to stick with elite guards like that. And not having him, there's not anybody else on this team that is able to do that. So when we play teams like the Clippers that don't have that elite quick guard, it fits better into the Lakers.
Well, system. I mean, Lou Williams is pretty elusive. You know what I mean? It's not like
he is on the second team, but yeah, but he's still a bigger guy. I think that Kuzma could be able to stick with him just a little.
You're
bit
saying
better.
Smaller guys?
Yes, smaller guys like Damian Lillard, Chris Paul. You know, those types of guys, and Lowry basically destroyed the Lakers.
He did.
Saturday.
He destroyed, and Fred VanVleet too.
Yeah, I mean, towards the end, Van Fleet
hit a bunch of threes at the end of the game. Laura, now, are you going to do what I'm going to do here, which is we heard Greg say 8 first and then go down to a 5? Do you believe he's being a stubborn male and he really means an 8, but then he realized 8 would be too high, so he went back down to 5?
I looked at it wrong.
100%. Greg is a flip-flopper. We already know that.
Whoa, no. Absolutely not.
Yeah. You tend to flip-flop a lot, Greg.
Never. There's never flip-flopping.
You mean?
I could probably go back to a few shows and grab audio.
I mean, she does have all the audio, Greg. Yeah. You may want to be careful with that is all I'm saying. She does have all the audio. Laura, where are you with me? Are you with me on Anthony Davis?
Yeah.
You're starting to get a little worried saying. It's not like you're like, oh my God, it's going to be a disaster. No one is saying that. But it's like, oh boy, like, you know, fourth quarter, winning time, where the hell are you? This has been a thing.
Yeah, I think he's like that guy that puts in all the work in a relationship really early on and thinks he could just kind of fly by the rest of it. It's like, no, bro, you got to keep putting in the work. We need you to win. We need you to show up. We need you to be there. And you're just cruising. And we can't have that.
Yeah, I'm a little worried. A little worried. And now I think he'll snap out of it. I think Vogel will also do. And by the way, let's look. I think Frank has done a fantastic job. Frank is probably one of the top this season. His performance is a top 5 coaching performance this year. I don't think there's any question about that. But let's not take that off of Frank a little bit in that particular game, where, you know, and he would say this to himself. I don't think this is being overly critical of Frank Vogel. I just think it's just stating the obvious. You know, it's the coach's job also, in addition to Anthony Davis needing to be more aggressive, to maybe get him put in better positions to allow himself to be more aggressive. Is that fair, Greg?
Yeah, absolutely. And he was kind of non-existent. I thought personally that Dwight Howard was on the floor too long in the fourth quarter.
Quicker, yes.
Right. Anthony Davis at the 5 instead of having Dwight Howard out there for basically the entire fourth quarter was a problem.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see how they bounce back against the Jazz tonight. And look, maybe it was just a letdown game after the Clippers. Maybe it could be just as simple as that, but we'll have to see. The other thing I want to get into is the Pac-12. Greg, you've seen this story, I would presume?
Yes, of course.
It is a tremendous story, okay? It is a really important story. So for those of you who don't know the story, Laura, there is some sound there from Adam Rittenberg, who is one of our college football insiders. He does a really good job. He covers the Pac-12 as well. And we're going to talk to Bruce Feldman about it. I could sit here and just go and give a million different reasons as to why this thing is going the way it's going. But I think Adam will kind of surmise it in a much quicker way in less than a minute or two. But here's what I will tell you. Basically, here's the list of demands the Pac-12 players want before returning to play. They want COVID health and safety protocols. That shouldn't be an issue at all. That absolutely should be at the forefront, okay, of all of this. Because here's the deal. If you're college football, you want these players back because you need their money. You need the money that they generate. And the players aren't idiots. They know the schools need them right now more than they need the schools right now. So this is actually a good time, I believe, to get some of this stuff done. Now, look, I will say this. Of this list of demands, there are some things that I think are absolutely no-brainers, should get done. There are a couple of them that are like, I don't know if I see that happening. And then there's some stuff in the middle that I think can be worked out. And if you're the players, and again, this is a negotiation, Because remember, college players don't have a union like professional sports players do. So if they can get the stuff in the middle done too, the majority of that stuff, this is great for them. So here's the list of demands the Pac-12 players want. COVID health and safety protocols, no-brainer. That should be easy. That isn't even an issue. That makes perfect sense. Void COVID-19 waiver of liability. Because remember, these schools want these kids to sign a waiver that, oh, if you get sick, it's basically on you. Not our fault. Not our problem. Yeah, that needs to get done too. There's no doubt. Which includes mandatory safety measures for COVID and beyond, and monitored by a third party, which I like. That's smart too. Next thing, preserve all sports by eliminating excessive expenditures. Eliminate bonuses and use endowments to preserve sports. So in other words, now look, I like this one on the surface, Greg, but the reality is, yes, I'd like for Larry Scott's salary to come down. I think the coaches and AD's salaries should come down. But I think that that's not going to be easy to come about. And secondly, what I would say to this is using endowment money is pretty much earmarked from the get-go. So I think that that is going to be a bit of a challenge for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's all these – when it comes to the money portion of all that stuff, they're going to have – a tough time no matter what. But I just love what they're doing. And I love the fact that they're all banding together and they're all coming together saying that we want to be healthy. And it's not just about them either. And they're the teams that are playing right now.
It's about all the other programs at the school too, and all the other minorities at the school too.
Right. And also that it's all the people that are going to come into school later on.
After
they're trying to blaze. Yes, they're trying to blaze a path for the rest of the way the college football works in general. And college sports work in general.
All right.
And I think that's incredible.
So that's number three on their list. Number four, end racial injustice in college sports. That's yes. Go do that. It includes forming a task force at each school, create a fund from 2% of the conference revenue to help with financial aid for low income black students from the Pac-12. That should be easy to do, too, I think. Pac-12 also create a Black College Athlete Summit where three players from each team, they meet with the Board of Regents and the Pac-12 Commissioner and all the ADs every single year in some sort of event, right? All that stuff should be done. That should be no-brainer stuff there. Next one, economic freedom and equity. Medical insurance that covers them for up to 6 years after playing in college, plus name, image, likeness. Name, image, likeness is already being taken care of, I think, but they can do a better job. Because really, if you remember the story of name, image, likeness, right now there's only three states that are definitely doing it. Now it's the three big ones, California, Texas, and Florida, okay? But that stuff, I think, will get sorted out. The medical insurance covering them for up to 6 years after playing in college, this is for all athletes. I'm 1,000,000% behind that. Because not only does it help the kids if they get seriously hurt or whatnot, but it also helps them if they want to, for example, start their own businesses, right? That means they don't need insurance right away because for their first 6 years, the NCAA or the Pac-12 in this case, or the conferences will cover their medical insurance. So I like that. And I think that can get done. That's one of those middle ground things. The next one, fair market pay and freedoms, which means a 50% revenue split. That is never going to happen. Here's why. 50% revenue split just for football means you're not going to be able to fund all the other sports. So considering all the stuff before this is about including all the other sports and getting back all the other sports, including, for example, Stanford, which eliminated like a dozen sports, that revenue split isn't going to work for that. So that if they're going to do a revenue split, which I don't think is going to happen, they're going to have to come up with a much lower number than that if they still want to fund all the other programs. 6-year scholarship to pursue grad school. I like that. By the way, coaches in the Coaches Association in the NCAA, they want 5 years at least. So they're close on that. I think the coaches and the players can unite on that. Eliminating policies that limit free speech, charitable activities, or other campus activities. Obviously, football players or athletes in general in college can't really do anything but go to school and practice their sport. I'm with them on that. That should be a no-brainer one. A one-time transfer without punishment. I'm totally down with that. Coaches can move whenever the hell they want. Be able to come back if undrafted. Absolutely. If you're undrafted, you should be allowed to come back to school. And then, of course, due process if you get in trouble on campus. Sure. Of course, everyone should be allowed due process. So the key here is to prioritize. There'll be things that the Pac-12, as I mentioned, will concede and others that are non-starters. But the stuff in the middle, some of the stuff that we discussed there, can be significant in the progress that these players seek, not only for football, but for all the sports, and then the people coming behind them. So Bruce Feldman, he is one of the best in the business at covering college football. College Football Insider, he joins us in 2 minutes. 710 ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things easier to help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Bruce Feldman, the best in the business at covering college football, is going to join us here in just a second to talk about the Pac-12 situation. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Bruce, thank you so much for joining us here. Bruce Feldman, of course, of Fox Sports and The Athletic with us here. Thank you so much for joining us. So I just went over in the last segment before you came on kind of the list of demands here. And my initial takeaway is that I think the players will have to prioritize here. There are some things here that are no-brainers. And there are a few things that are non-starters, but I think there's a lot of stuff that there's some middle ground on that I think the players can make real headway on here in regards to not only themselves, but other athletes across the board in college sports, and of course, the next group of kids coming beyond them. What are your thoughts on their list of demands?
Well, I think you're right, George. I think there's some stuff that people are going to look at and go, okay, that's outrageous. That's not going to happen. And then there's some other things that I think people look at and go, okay, that's probably more reasonable. From talking to people for our story on The Athletic that went up a little bit ago, one of the challenges I think people within the Pac-12 wonder about is who's going to be doing the negotiating here, because there's a lot of stuff that you have to really sort out. It's really complicated. It doesn't mean some of these things can't happen, but it's what are the processes that are going to be in place. And then some of these other things about the revenue sharing, people would just kind of roll their eyes at that, I think, because they go, that's just not realistic. And then I think some of the conversations that have happened internally from my reporting, from what I understand, is when people have mentioned endowments and things like that, I'm not sure how clear they are on how those things actually work.
Yeah, the financial stuff seems to be the part that's the biggest issue because, as it always would be, because of as you pointed out, there's not much maybe there's not an understanding, like the 50% revenue split. Well, it seems like they're taking on this task not only to help football players, but to help all sports, right? And if that's the case, a 50% revenue split is clearly not going to work. So things like that I definitely think need to be tweaked or eliminated. But I think if they can – I think, honestly, Bruce, they could probably get the majority of the other stuff out here outside of the revenue split, I think, is going to be a big issue, obviously. And really everything else, I think, for the most part, is at least fair game to discuss.
Yeah, I think, again, the revenue share, I think the one is the one of the things that's grabbing eyeballs. And one of the people I talked to yesterday had said, okay, well, here are the questions you have to ask somebody on that is, how good is your finance team? How good is your accounting team? There's a lot of stuff that is going to happen there. And I think that where the rubber meets the road on this is not just how the Pac-12 and Larry Scott's reaction is going to be, but trying to gauge how big this movement is in terms of not necessarily just players who will retweet some of their teammates who are actively involved, but also saying, okay, it's one thing to say you support it, and it's another thing to say, will you opt out and not play because of it? And I think that's the part where a lot of people don't have a great read on it right now. And I think it's worth noting that one of the people who's behind this, Ramogi Humma, he was involved in the Kane Coulter situation at Northwestern years ago. He also was involved, from what I'm told, in the UCLA situation that kind of blew up a little bit in the LA Times about 2 months ago. And so I think the question is, not how real it is, but just how much weight is actually behind it and where it goes from there. Because there's no doubt that it's picked up a lot of momentum on social media. And while that's real, I think it's then trying to get for people to try to assess, okay, what do we make of this as it goes forward, as how the Pac-12 is going to have to try to sort it out.
Bruce Feldman joining us here of The Athletic and, of course, Fox Sports. Support The Athletic. Support journalism. Subscribe to The Athletic. Washington State's head coach has kind of been embroiled in a bit of a controversy here because he allegedly told one of his wide receivers that if he wanted to opt out for COVID reasons, that was one thing. But if he's aligning with the Pac-12 player unity group, that would create a quote-unquote issue for him, and he wouldn't be allowed to, I guess, be part of the program, basically. What is the latest on that reporting there, Bruce?
Yeah, I talked to him yesterday, George, after that started to get circulated around, and when I say circulated, it was before the tape recording or before the Dallas Morning News transcript went up. And I felt like, all right, I kind of understand what he's saying, where he's saying, I'm not cutting a player because he's aligned, as this is what he told me, because of him opting out for health reasons, and this particular player cited health reasons. But then it did seem like, is he misspeaking? Is there something here that it just doesn't sound quite right? And I really don't know how that's going to further unfold if you're Pat Chung, the AD. I mean, it's not a great look right now for Washington State in the face of that, just because of you have this transcript out where it just seemed like, okay, well, if you're aligned with them, is that part of my reasoning? Because I think if he had stopped where he said, if you opt out, I understand it, and that part, I'm not sure anybody would have had a problem with it because they're going to honor his scholarship. And his point, as he related to me, was, well, if you can't be around the team, if you don't feel comfortable with the health conditions, then why are you going to be around, keep training and keep doing everything, but just not getting on the plane for a handful of the games if we have them? It's the part about, well, if you're aligned with this boycott, as Pac-12 coaches are trying to figure out what exactly that means, are there ramifications and repercussions to that? That's the part where, I think that they need to clarify and say, look, this is either we said this and we shouldn't have said this, or we said this and we didn't mean for it to come out the way it did. I mean, either way, it's not a great look in this climate right now.
Yeah, no question about it. Bruce Feldman joining us here, Fox Sports and The Athletic. Support The Athletic, support journalism, subscribe to The Athletic. What do you think gets done here? Like, if you had to, granted, none of us have a crystal ball, Bruce, but you're as informed as anyone with this stuff. Like, what do you think absolutely gets done? Out of all these lists of demands, which are the ones that you say to yourself, these are no-brainers, they're not going to have to worry about this stuff?
Well, some of the things that, you know, again, I brought up that UCLA thing from 2 months ago with Ramogi Huma, and there was a former player who was involved, and it felt like it was a big deal, and I'm not saying it was, there was nothing to it, but they talked about these player demands that were already actually in the works happening. So I think when some of the things are in there about having your scholarship protected and some of those things and some of the safety matters, I think they will be heard. I think they will be heard on the social justice fronts, because I think, honestly, I think the Pac-12 is probably more aligned with that probably already than most of the other Power Five conferences are, or some of the other Power Five conferences are. And I think, so some of those steps, I think, are in place. The parts where I don't want to say it's going to be a negotiation here for Larry Scott, but I think there's going to be a lot of things where he's going to go, okay, we want your voice, we want your input. I think they get the message, but I think a lot of the coaches, like, and this is the part which I think may be lost, especially when you know, we talk about Nick Rolovich for a minute. I talked to coaches yesterday in the Pac-12 who are like, I agree with a lot of the things they're saying. They're going over our heads, which is fine in this regard, but a lot of the things that they're advocating for, they feel like are reasonable. Now, the revenue sharing one is almost people look at it and go, okay, that's not how this kind of thing works. It's not necessarily in theirs, but when you start talking about endowments and things like that, it doesn't line up. But when it comes to some of the other things, even if it's better health care and some of those things, I think the Pac-12 and I think other parts of college football will try to address those better, especially in light of what's going on now with players who don't know the long-term effects potentially of COVID-19. And I think that there's just already a lot of issues that have come to the fore in the last few years about the wellness of college athletes, and whether that's the physical health or even the mental health component. I think there's a lot of people who genuinely want to address that. So I think on that front, I think they will make progress.
What is your best guess as to what happens with college football? Are they really going to try to play in the fall, or do you think this could get punted to the spring, as some have suggested?
I think they're really going to try to play. I think the thing that would give them pause, George, is we only know portions about schools, what they're saying that they've found in their, how many players have tested positive, who's asymptomatic. You know, it's not like we've heard stories of players that schools have said, whether for HIPAA purposes have not said it, or for a variety of other reasons, why maybe there's been some other issues if somebody had to go to the ER or some severity. I think if there are issues that arise where players or people part of the team, whether it's staffers or coaches, have more significant issues on the health front, I think that would give people pause, especially on the university president's level. But the read I would have, and maybe this is not the right one, but these conference commissioners who have a lot of influence, and yes, they're supposedly listening to medical experts, but if they're being told that the schools in their conferences have not had severe cases, I think that's probably giving them a little more confidence to go forward, because I know from talking to some trainers around the country, they feel like they have a little better handle on how to deal with COVID and the players taking it more seriously and their responsibility not to go out to bars, maybe not to do some of the other things that maybe the regular students would be more inclined to do. But they do worry about what happens when the regular students come back. And when the regular students come back, if there's a surge and then that carries over to the football program, I think that's going to be a part where they're going to be monitoring it really closely. And I think they're going to also monitor very closely what happens with baseball. If baseball can keep on track, and that's a positive sign. If it struggles, then I think that's something that is going to be hard for them to ignore.
Bruce Feldman, best in the business at covering college football for Fox Sports and The Athletic. Subscribe to The Athletic. Support journalism. Bruce, you're the best, man. Thank you so much for the time, as always. Stay healthy. Stay safe.
You too. Always a pleasure, George. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Take care. There he is, Bruce Feldman, with us here. He mentioned Major League Baseball. Rob Manfred making big claims. We'll get to that in just a second. Plus, the good and the bad for the Dodgers this weekend. Coming up in 3 minutes. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests like Bruce Feldman appeared via the Shell Penzo Performance Line. He was great, as always. If you missed that, go to the Sedano Show podcast and subscribe to the podcast there. We always appreciate you do that. And Amin's going to join us in 8 minutes. We'll talk to Amin about the weekend that was in the bubble, including the Lakers and Anthony Davis's passive nature in the fourth quarter through two games. The NBA is back. Tune in tonight as Luka and the Mavs host Harden and the Rockets, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 5:30 Pacific on most ESPN radio stations, but you can hear it on the app if you don't want to listen to the Laker game. If, let's say, you are a Clipper fan and you want to find out what the Rockets are doing and the Mavs, you can listen that way. So Amin's going to join us there. What did you make real quick of what Feldman had to say, Bergman, before we move on to baseball?
I mean, I thought it was interesting that he thinks that there's some parts of that demands that are just going to be like, no, that's zero chance that it's possibly going to happen.
I'm with him on that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's right, but it just, the first time I read through it, I was like, okay, makes sense. But he's right.
But it's what I'm telling you. Like, the money part of it doesn't make sense, though, Greg. Like, the endowments are earmarked.
Right.
And 50% of the revenue, their purpose is to help bring back sports across the board and help all the athletes across the board beyond college football. If you're taking 50% of the revenue sharing, then you're not going to be able to help those sports. Like, it's just simple math. You know what I mean?
Right. No. It makes total sense. I was just saying that was the interesting part to it to me that made me think about it in a different way. And it kind of would go the opposite way of what the players want. They want to help every sport, but then in essence, by getting the 50% revenue, they would be hurting other sports.
Yeah. Everything else should be good to go. Everything else should be like, outside of those two things, everything else should be on the table for them. Like, I don't think there's any question. And if the Pac-12 doesn't commit to that stuff, then I think that there could be some issues. But to Bruce's point, the Pac-12 is one of those conferences that it's like, hey, we kind of agree with all this stuff already. You brought it to our attention. We'll work on it. We'll work on it with you. Like, we will do this. But good on the players, because now's the time to do that. Anyway, Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred. So Rob Manfred this weekend told Carl Ravage, okay? I want to get the exact tweet up because I want to talk to you about
this. They're like best friends now, by the way. Carl Ravage and Rob Manfred. Carl Ravage gets everything from Manfred.
Well, yeah, but Carl Ravage is really good.
He is. No, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just like, yeah, he gets everything.
So here's what Manfred told Ravage on Saturday afternoon. Commissioner Rob Manfred tells me we are playing. The players need to do better, but I'm not a quitter in general, and there's no reason to quit now. We have had to be fluid, but it is manageable. First of all, why are you blaming the players? Like, this is on you too. You're the commissioner who created a terrible plan, right? Like, you created a plan where there are protocols in place, and yes, the players aren't following those protocols, but even those protocols aren't necessarily the right plan. Like, I don't know, traveling? Like, that part of it, it seems silly that he is just completely omitting himself from the equation of blame.
It drove me nuts when I saw that. The first thing that I saw was, why are you going after the players? The players need to be better. Yes, of course they do. But how about you, Rob Manfred? Don't allow players to choose whether they're going to play or not that day
right.
In the middle of the pandemic.
Right.
I mean, that's something where you could have stepped in and said, hey, you know what? There's too many positive tests. You're not playing today. Simple. It's easy.
Yeah.
Blaming the players. God, every time he talks, I roll my eyes and just like, will you just stop? Just go away. See, yeah. He says he's not a quitter. How about you just quit your job anyway and let somebody else take over that actually knows what they're doing? Can't stand
it. You know, Greg, when they're – I mean, you really don't like him. You know, Greg, when they talk about, like, head coaches and they say, you know, this guy may just be better as, like, an offensive coordinator, a defensive
right.
coordinator, an assistant coach. He was a great number two for Major League Baseball because he's, like, a shrewd negotiator and he's an attorney. But he doesn't have the personality, I think, or even the – even the proper temperament, right, to be the number one guy and be the face of the sport.
No, be a lawyer. Just be the attorney for the team. Yes, that's a great spot for you. You were doing a good job. You worked with the Players Association well to get things done for baseball. But once you took over, everything has gone wrong. Just absolutely everything that he could have done, he's done incorrectly. So, yeah, it's time to go backwards a step.
So Clayton Kershaw felt good. Let's talk about good things. Were you happy with his performance this weekend?
Yeah, he was great. He went three no-hit innings to start off the game, and then he only gave up a couple of hits. I thought he looked fantastic. He was striking guys out. His velocity was somewhere around 92, 93, which is actually up from where it's been over the last couple of years. Look, if that's the Clayton Kershaw that we're going to get, I'm totally happy with that guy.
Yeah. And Mookie Betts... not so great in the sense of he busted his finger, so he's day to day. I mean, we're all kind of day to day, but right. But he had, you know what, things had picked up for him a little bit. Like, remember, you know, his first couple games he was in, and then you know he had kind of come around, at least at the plate particularly. That throw he made on, was it Saturday night that he made where he threw it from the corner in right field and just like drilled the guy at third base?
Yeah, it was Ketel Marte, and I believe it was Saturday. And, yeah, that was an absolute gun. So now you got a guy in right field, Mookie Betts, that can do that. And then you have a guy at center field in Cody Bellinger that can do the exact same thing but to home or any base.
Yeah.
So that outfield is ridiculously incredible. Good. Yes. And
yeah.
And you're right. Mookie Betts was figuring it all out. He was hitting the ball hard. He was hitting home runs, doubles. All of a sudden it started to click for him again. And Cody Bellinger was kind of the same way with his two-run home run earlier yesterday, and they're starting to look scary again. I'm hoping that Mookie's okay.
Yeah. I think he'll be fine if it's just day to day. Let
fine.
Me grab a
yep.
call real quick before we go to Amin. Chris in LA. Chris, what's up?
Hey, good morning, George. And first of all, welcome back to the morning, man. Good to hear your voice in the morning.
Thank you. Well, I'll be shifting to afternoons beginning on August 17th. I don't know if they told you that already, but
okay.
On August 17th, me and LZ will be starting at 4 after Mason in Ireland.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll be shifting with you. That's fine.
Great. Thank you.
Hey, couple of quick points. One, I don't think the Pac-12 players have the leverage that they think they may, because I think it'll be like NFL football where they'll just get the next person to play behind them. You know, they'll get the juniors or the sophomores to play. And secondly, I think they have a chance, as has been said, regarding the public health issues as well as the social reform, because, hey, it got the rebel flag out of NASCAR. But the money items they'll have an issue with, particularly, I think, the health care, because that's got to be required to all title, because Title IX has to be required to all sports. And health care is expensive. Maybe they negotiate to 2 years after graduation, but it's expensive. My daughter, we pay for my daughter almost $3,000 a year for health care.
Yeah.
So that might be something that's negotiable. But the public policy items, I think they have a really good shot on, but the money, probably not so much.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that the money stuff, well, first of all, the math doesn't even add up on some of that stuff. And thank you for the call, Chris. And I think that's just part of it. And then, but I'm with you. The healthcare is going to be an interesting sticking point. I think they win six because you want to go high and then maybe meet in the middle at like three. But I'm with you. I do think that would be smart. I think it would be smart. I also think I like the part of extending scholarships to 6 years to help them go to grad school if they don't play sports beyond the requisite amount of time that they're there. I like all that stuff. I do think all that other stuff is definitely on the table. We'll ask Amin. Amin, you know, went to Georgia Tech. He went to a big-time college school. You know, he was former NBA, you know, scout. He's one of our front office insiders. We'll talk NBA. We'll ask him about the Pac-12 stuff as well. We're back in 2 minutes. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Pennzoil Synthetic Motor Oils, made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Amin Alhassan, friend of the program, ESPN NBA insider, front office insider, giving us the straight talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Now, Amin, you and I were talking during the break, and you have a hot take already. Oh, Amin, you already had a hot take during the break.
I did.
Because let me set it up. We're in the break, and I'm like, oh, man, Heat and Raptors already on NBA TV. I'm in. I'm so happy. And you said...
I said, first of all, I said, already? Because it's like 10:30. What are we doing playing a game at 10:30 in the morning? And then I said, you know what? I'm sick of these. It's too much basketball. There's too much basketball.
I mean, come on.
We need to scale it back down to like 3 games a day.
What is wrong with you? What do you mean? There's never too much basketball. Hashtag basketball never stops.
No, it needs to stop for a little bit. I haven't seen my kids in like 4 days. I live in the same house. I haven't seen them. I'm spending no time with them. I'm not having meals. I'm eating in my room. I can't take a nap. I can't work out. I can't do anything. Like, oh, there's another game on. You know, God bless the Sacramento Kings, because them getting destroyed by the Magic allowed me to go and actually live my life for about 2 hours.
Well, the entire Saturday, all day Saturday, there was so many blowouts that I went to the pool with the kids. I hung out, you know what I'm saying? And then, you know, I had the TV kind of in the background. I'd kind of glance at it. And then I sat down and watched Lakers-Raptors, you know? Like, it was fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, I just would like, just like a breather. Just let me exhale, process what I just saw. Maybe, you know, take a walk, think about things, and then, like, watch some more basketball. But just back to back to back. And starting at 10:30 in the morning, I'm sorry, man. We're not the NFL. We need to stop that.
I mean.
We need to stop that in the track.
Laura, tell Amin what you just texted me.
I said, first we complained that we didn't have any sports. Now you're complaining we have too much sports.
I mean, what's wrong with you?
Typical guy.
It's just to be expected, though, right? Like, we want a nice, happy medium. We don't want it just gushing all over us, and we don't want it to be, like, dry as a bone. Can I have a medium?
No. No, I want excess, okay? That's what I want. I want excess. I want it to ooze out of my body, basketball, all day. All right. Real quick, since we were talking basketball, so after the Clipper game, I was a little concerned with this, okay? Less concerned about LeBron. LeBron has shot only 37% in 4 games against the Clippers. But I feel like LeBron will figure it out. Even though Kawhi and Paul George are there, it's not like LeBron didn't face, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Andre Iguodala, and Draymond Green as a quartet trying to defend him and did pretty well in a series, even though maybe at times in the regular season didn't go as great. So I feel like he'll figure it out. I am a little concerned about Anthony Davis in this sense. And I mean little by very little, like tiny concern. But it is a thing. In the fourth quarter against the Clippers, averaging 7 minutes a game, his output in the fourth quarter, 2 points, 0 points, 4 points, 2 points. Then against the Raptors, whose defense, I understand, is there to overload against the superstars and make everybody else try to beat you. But there's no way Anthony Davis should only be taking 7 shots in a game and only one in the fourth quarter. How much of this is on him to be more aggressive, more assertive? How much of this is on Vogel to get him in better positions? LeBron to put him in better positions? Like, where do you lie on all that stuff with Anthony Davis?
The answer is yes. So Vogel has to make it a point in timeouts. Guys, we got to get AD going. So we're going to draw. We've got scripted plays that are not necessarily to get him the ball here or there, but just literally just to get him the ball with the understanding it's on him. It's on LeBron because LeBron's got the ball in his hands and he is smart enough of a like supercomputer out there on the floor to detect where his guy is, how many touches his guy's gotten and get him more involved. But ultimately, George, you can bring a horse to water, but you can't force him to drink. Every superstar at some point has to tell his teammates, bleep you, get me the ball. Kenny Smith told the story. I never forgot it. He told this like 10 years ago now. They were talking about Dwight Howard in Orlando not getting the ball enough and how he can't have like 8 points at halftime in a loss. And Kenny said, I remember one game where Hakeem had like 4 shots in the first half and he came in and he mother bleeped every one of us. And everyone was like, oh, Hakeem curses and gets angry. He's like, hell yeah, he does, because that's part and parcel of being a superstar. You may seem like a nice guy, but sometimes the nice guy's got to go away and you got to be demanding. And so ultimately, Anthony Davis does bear responsibility there. But of course, Vogel and LeBron can do more to make sure he's involved.
Yeah, because that to me, look, I think that for the Lakers to win a championship, again, I know what I'm getting from LeBron, right? And I know what those role players are, right? And there's going to be ups and downs with those guys, but they've got enough guys where you feel like one guy will probably step up in most games, right? Like, but Anthony Davis, to me, is the key, particularly against the Clippers, because they don't have an actual matchup for him. So it's like if he can power through and really dominate in winning time, then I don't think anybody really can beat the Lakers.
Well, this is the problem, right? The problem is, and I've said this all year long, the Lakers have problems with teams that play five out, right? That don't play traditionally with the big in the paint, right? The Raptors did it to them, the Clippers obviously did it to them earlier this year. The game in Miami that they ended up winning but almost lost to a team that they're much better than was because Bam Adebayo was operating on the outside. The game against Milwaukee in Milwaukee, where Milwaukee just kind of embarrassed them. All the teams where they play five out, the Lakers have problems with. And so, you know, the key when you talk about that is Anthony Davis. He can't afford, if teams are going to play five out, right, and guard him with someone who's lesser than him, he can't afford to be passive. He can't afford to kind of find his rhythm. He has to be aggressive, because otherwise, they basically neutralize one of the big Laker advantages, which is having Anthony Davis, who's a top player in this league.
Well, to your point, in that Miami game, he was really good in the fourth quarter. You know what I'm saying? And he was he kind of asserted himself, and that's how they were able to win that game. And ultimately, doesn't it boil down to Anthony Davis, as much as he hates it, is going to have to play center in some of these games?
Dude, because if they can't play him at center, then now you're dealing with serious liability. Because I don't care how Dwight's been good this year, but he's not good enough where we're going to play him 35 minutes and dumping it to him because he's going up against, Patrick Patterson or Jermichael Green on the block or Montrezl Harrell when that happens. Like, that's just not the best utilization of Laker talent, right? The best utilization of Laker talent is AD at the five and maybe Kuzma's out there at the four, maybe LeBron's at the four, whatever it is. And now you can match talent for talent, because that's ultimately when teams go small, that's what they're doing. They're saying, I don't care about positions. I'm putting my most talented players out there.
Speaking of small, Houston, I've been saying puncher's chance. Are you buying a puncher's chance?
No, because as long as they're slated to meet Oklahoma City in the first round, I'm saying it right now. I'm saying it with bass in my voice, with my chest out. The Oklahoma City Thunder will wash them.
Wow.
I'm telling you, because it's a thinking man's game. And what they ultimately do in Houston is just playing off emotion and feel, and all that's nice for regular season matchups, where we just game plan for the night and then we got to move on to the next one. But when you get into the playoffs and everything is based on game planning to stop you from doing what you like to do, right? Everyone thinks, ooh, they're double-teaming Harden as soon as he crosses half court. You think all these teams, that's the best they've got? Hell no. They hide the good stuff where they mix it up on them because they don't want the Rockets to have it on film, on tape, so that, oh, they're going to try this. So then when they do this, James, you can do that. No. You show them the double because that's a nice, easy thing to do right now. But when the playoffs hit, you're going to see defensive packages that you haven't seen all year long. And that's ultimately, when I look at the Houston Rockets offense, it's just too simplistic. It's too bare bones. And I don't believe their personnel has the ability to kind of make other things happen outside of just an up-and-down flowing game. And I think Oklahoma City is the opposite of that. They're very regimented. They're very great at execution. And obviously Chris Paul and the grudge match factor really doesn't hurt either.
Amino Hassan, ESPN NBA Insider, front office insider, says there's too much basketball. Send your thoughts to him on Twitter, at Darth Amin, and feel free to do that for the rest of the week. Thank you for stopping by, Amin. We'll talk to you soon.
No problem. Cinepulp Podcast. You reviewed The Million Ways to Die in the West. Check it out wherever you get your podcast.
Yes, always. Subscribe to his podcast. That one and Black Opinions Matter as well. Subscribe to Cinepulp and that one. Both podcasts. Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
See ya. All right, coming up next, what you need to know, including some interesting notes for the Lakers game tonight with the Jazz. We'll get to that in 4 minutes.